All right, good afternoon, everyone. We will call this meeting of the TRPA Governing Board to order. The date is Wednesday, November 16th, 2022, and it is 12:25. The first item on the agenda is the roll call to determine quorum. Maria, could you please call the roll?
Ms. Alding?
Here.
Mrs. Sagaski?
I'm here.
Ms. Conrad Seda?
Here.
Ms. Dis?
Here.
Ms. Faustinos? Mr. Friedrich?
Here.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Mr. Hicks?
Here.
Ms. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Honigman?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence? Ms. No? Mr. Rice? Ms. Williamson?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. I will now go over a few rules, meeting rules for the day for the members of the public who are joining us remotely. To address board members directly with your comments, raise your hand in Zoom by clicking the raise hand at the bottom of your screen at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the board. If you have used the dial-in numbers to join us by telephone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand and be unmuted. To remote board members, if you wish to speak, please also raise your hand in Zoom. A reminder, remote board members, you may not use the chat box to make any comments or have sidebar conversations. Please, everyone, remember to mute your mic unless you're speaking, and thank you if you're able for those of you who can turn on your camera. Let's start off this meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. If everyone could please stand and say the pledge.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Moving on to the approval of the agenda. John Hester, are there any changes to the agenda?
Madam Chair, there are no changes, but I did want to point out that after the minutes and the two consent agendas, we have lunch scheduled.
Thank you. Important one. Any objections from the board? Hearing none, we deem the agenda approved. Next, let's move on to agenda item 4, which is approval of the minutes. We have a set of minutes from September 28th, 2022 on page 23 of your packet. In addition, the October 26, 2022 governing board meeting minutes will be included in the December 14th, 2022 packet. Do I have a motion for approval of the minutes?
Madam Chair, I had just a few minor clerical changes to recommend, which I have shared with Maria. And with that, I move to accept the September 28th, 2022 governing board meeting minutes as amended.
Thank you very much. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
All right. Hearing no opposition, motion passes. That brings us to agenda item 5, which is the TRPA consent calendar. There are 13 items on consent, 11 of which were reviewed by the Operations and Governance Committee, and 2 which weren't reviewed by any committee. As a reminder to the public, after board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in person to be called on or in Zoom and be unmuted by a TRPA staff member. Shelley, may we please have a report from the Operations and Governance Committee?
Sure, I'll make it a lot briefer than the meeting itself. So item number 1 was the presentation of the October financials. And as with the last several previous months, all expenditures are within budget and revenues are at or exceeding projections, which is good news. Item number 2 was a recommended inflation adjustment to the TRPA's rental car mitigation fee. The fee would go from $5.50 per day per car to $5.75 per day per car. The committee recommended approval of the increase. There was some discussion about future adjustments perhaps being automatic and being tied to a different index, like some of our other mitigation fees, which would be the Western States Index, as opposed to the index that includes San Francisco. So anyway, that was part of the discussion. It was not the recommendation before you today. item number three was the release of $3.7 million in excess coverage mitigation funds to the Tahoe or to the California Tahoe Conservancy for the acquisition of a piece of property in South Lake Tahoe. There was a slight change to the motion that the governing board will be approving if this item moves forward today. And that motion I'd like to read into the record. It reads, a motion to approve the release to the California Tahoe Conservancy of $3.7 million in excess coverage mitigation funds for acquisition and site stabilization of a 31-acre South Lake Tahoe Motel 6 site or any portions thereof subject to the conditions contained in the TRPA-CTC Memorandum of Understanding. The committee recommended that the governing board approve the release of those mitigation dollars. And then there were a number of items having to do with transportation improvements. Those are items 4 through 11, and the committee recommended unanimously to have the governing board approve those as presented.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments from board members on these consent items? Okay, seeing none, let's move on to consent items number 12 and 13, which were not heard by any committee. Item 12 is the, and I apologize if I get these names wrong, Degnan, Struck, and Hatchman New Multiple Parcel Pier Project, number 570, 580, and 590, Westlake Boulevard, Placer County, California, assessor parcel numbers 097-122-024-1010, 025, and 027, and TRPA file number ERSP 2022-0003. Item 13 is the Executive Director Compensation Package, effected November 28, 2022. Information on these items can be found on pages 147 and 203 of your packet. Are there any questions or comments from board members on these consent items? Okay, seeing none, let's go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now, either in person or by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen, or by dialing star 9.
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Thank you. And seeing no one in person either, we will close public comment on this item. At this point, I will entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar as amended by Shelley.
Move to approve as amended.
Thank you. We have a motion. Any discussion from the board? Okay, hearing none. Maria, could you please call the roll?
Ms. Saldine?
Yes.
Ms. Conrad-Seda?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos? Ms. Diss?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Honigman?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence? Ms. Novosel? Mr. Rice? Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Madam Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you. And I did want to just take one more opportunity to say congrats again to Julie Reagan. And also, I really wanted to very briefly but sincerely thank John Hester for all you've done and continue to do. And Julie, I know that you might want to say a word or two here as well.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair / Vice Chair. Julie Reagan, I just wanted to thank the board for your support and just tell you how much I'm looking forward to being TRPA's next executive director. And we'll have lots of time to have conversations about that. But I especially wanted to thank John Hester for being the interim acting director for the last 5+ months. And really just say, and John Marshall, all three J's at the table, working with our entire leadership team and our staff. You know, a change of leadership has a big impact on an organization. And I think because we have such a strong team, we have persevered and looking forward to the future. So really appreciate John Hester's leadership and the whole staff. Thank you.
And I would just like to say thank you for the opportunity for the past 5 months. It's been fun working with you all because you all are great to work with. And we have a very motivated and talented staff who've made it easy as well. And I look forward to taking it to the next level, working with Julie. So thank you.
Thank you. That's great. Before we move on to the next agenda item, we need a motion to adjourn as the TRPA and convene as the Tahoe Metropolitan Planning Organization. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Madam Chair, I move it, that we adjourn as TRPA and convene as the TMPO.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 Thank you. Motion passes. That brings us to agenda item 6, which is the TMPO consent calendar. There are two items on consent, which were reviewed by the Operations and Governance Committee. As a reminder to the public, after board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand and be called on in Zoom or be unmuted by TRPA staff. Shelley, can we please have a report from the Operations and Governance Committee?
Sure, it's going to be very brief. The Operations and Governance Committee recommended the TRPA Governing Board approve both items 1 and 2 under the TMPO consent calendar.
Report. Any questions or comments from board members? Hearing none, let's go to public comment on this item. Again, if you wish to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand or dial *9.
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Great, thank you. And seeing as no one is coming forward, we will close public comment. At this point, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I would move TMPO's consent calendar, items 1 and 2, for approval.
Thanks, Bill. You're on it. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
We have to do a roll call on this.
There's no project involved, so we can make do with.
Okay, good.
Acclamation.
Perfect. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move that we adjourn as TMPO and reconvene as TRPA and take a lunch break.
It's like you knew what I was going to ask. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. We are adjourned. Let's see, it's 12:40. Why don't we do 45 minutes and we'll come back. Thank you. I don't know. Well, you guys tell me. Come back at 1?
Come back at 1.
Is that okay? Okay. Apologies to my online colleagues. We are actually going to come back at 1 with our lunches to continue on with the agenda. If anyone has issues or questions, let me know.
To present it to you today, the EIP was established 26 years ago now as a list of priority projects that we needed to implement to achieve the goals of the regional plan. Today, we've achieved and accomplished over 750 projects, and like I mentioned, 80 partners strong. So let's start with the first slide, please. Just to give you an idea of what I'm going to cover today, I'll do a quick recap of the genesis of the EIP, the EIP story. I'll go over the different focus areas of the program, how the program's organized, give you a funding picture, and at the very end, I'll focus on the strategic initiative. And many of you are familiar with the EIP. I know that you hear about the EIP almost at every governing board meeting and are very familiar with the genesis and the story and the history, but I do think it is important to cover it briefly again. So I'll thread the history through the presentation of how it reflects into what we're doing today. And my colleague, Kat McIntyre, I think she's in the back, is going to be following me, and she's going to be really zeroing in on the Forest Health Program focus area of the EIP. So this should serve as a really good precursor to her presentation. Okay, next slide. Okay, so let's dig in and imagine ourselves back in 1997, where the EIP really was born in a time of crisis. At that time, the lake was losing about a foot of clarity a year. And although TRPA had been created nearly about 30 years prior to that, and we had put some really great regulatory and growth controls in place, some good regional planning for the future. We really began to realize that to achieve the goals of the regional plan that we had set out for ourselves, we were going to have to go back and fix some of the sins of the past, so to speak. Our science community was really sounding the alarm at this point because of, after doing extensive watershed assessments and reviewing the record of data that we have here, it was clear that tons of fine sediment and water pollution was flowing into the lake, which was what was causing this rapid clarity decline. And it became really clear that this came from old existing development that was here that sometimes predated TRPA or in the early, 50s, 60s, 70s. And so this is what really began the call to action. It became clear at that point that we would need to act quickly to be able to save the lake, and really not one jurisdiction could do it alone. It needed to be coordinated across boundaries. It needed to be multifaceted, and it needed to be a pretty large undertaking and a very collaborative undertaking to do. And so the story goes, a few leaders got together, they got out their pens and papers. They said, if we could really put together what we needed to fix, what would those projects look like? What would it take? How would we do it? How much would it cost? And they did that. It started just as a big list of projects, and it was modeled after a CIP, a capital improvement program. But for Tahoe, it was an environmental improvement program. So like I said, big list of projects, and the price tag was $900 million at that point. Next slide. So that strong call to action from here, that list of projects got attention. And truly, we were talking about landscape scale restoration at the watershed scale. We were one of the first ones talking about it before others were. Our Nevada senator at the time, Harry Reid, got an invitation out to President Clinton and Al Gore, who you see in this slide, to hear our story, hear the call to action. And the first federal summit in 1997 was born. And it was there that all the different sectors committed to implementing that list of projects. The federal government agreed to foot $300 million of that bill. And the states, local jurisdictions, the private sector, they all stepped up to the plate to match it. And that's, we got those huge funding commitments in place. And really, the EIP was set off on the right foot and ready to basically tackle a really huge undertaking. Next slide. So the way the EIP works here for us at TRPA is it's really the project implementation arm of the regional plan. So we implement the regional plan in a few different ways here. We do it by maintaining and updating the plan and our code and our thresholds and really being that anchor for implementation. We also do it through permitting and compliance of projects that come in and making sure they comply with all of that we've set out there. And then the EIP, it really recognizes that you need a proactive program of projects to really work and achieve those goals that we've set out in the regional plan. And we serve here at TRPA in a few different capacities for the EIP. We serve as a leader and convener of the many different partners that are implementing projects. We serve as an administrator for tracking all of those projects, including the funding, the accomplishments, what our priorities are. We also serve as a fiscal agent for different program areas, some of the program areas. We permit EIP projects, and we help facilitate project implementation wherever we can. And we try to create incentives for partners to do these types of projects because of the types of projects we really need. So for example, for EIP permitting, we waive permitting fees for public entities that are implementing EIP priority projects. And a lot of them get streamlined environmental review through our partners' MOUs to streamline getting those projects in place. Next slide. If you can see this graphic, I think it's really important to cover over the last 26 years now, how the program has matured over time. And it's really gone through a couple major growth phases. And these different phases definitely overlap. I'm talking about these at a pretty high level, but I like to think of them in three kind of different eras. First, the first 10 years, which is what I mainly just talked about, is those genesis years. The first Lake Tahoe Restoration Act was passed. The partnership was galvanized. We put those funding commitments in place. And LTRA, the Lake Tahoe Restoration Act, really served as the anchor for those other sectors to come to the table and create that match. And like I said, it was that big list of projects, and the projects were generally the low-hanging fruit that we knew as a partnership that we really need to accomplish. And there was a huge focus on water quality in that era, just as because of what I said with the rapidly declining clarity. Big emphasis on stormwater retrofit, retrofitting our roads, our highways, getting homeowners to do their own BMPs on their private property, relooking at how we were treating roads with abrasives in the winter, and doing restoration on some of our major tributaries, Upper Truckee River, Ward Creek, Blackwood Canyon, I'm sure come to mind. The second 10 years, in this next phase, the program becomes much more sophisticated. And the EIP partners really rolled up their sleeves and put a lot of thought into strategically planning into these next 10 years, now that the program structure was in place. They developed program focus areas, action priorities, and performance measures, which enabled us to better plan and track our progress. We also developed a collaborative governance structure, including an executive steering committee that we refer to often as the Tahoe Interagency Executive Steering Committee, TIE, if you hear that acronym, to really help shape and follow the strategic plan of the project. We created EIP working groups in all the focus areas. And as far as priorities and projects, we saw a big emphasis on forest health in this era because, of course, Angora Fire happened in 2008. So then you had one of the first big EIP working groups come online, the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team, to really ramp up that area and get more hazardous fuels treatments on the ground. Lastly, the 2017 to what we're in right now through 2027-ish. I forgot one thing on the last area I did want to mention is that there was at the very end of this was an economic downturn at the end during this era. So while that price tag for the first 10 years was about $900 million, this second era was also about the same price. We're averaging about $900 million, a billion for about 10 years for the EIP. And so that LTRA that was passed in the early era was expiring, and the Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act that was funding LTRA was sunsetting. And of course, budget challenges were in every funding sector at that time. So the EIP was really facing a fiscal cliff in that era. And we were struggling to really think how we were going to continue the momentum of that program through that economic downturn. So now I'll go to current. At the end of 2016, that fiscal cliff started to look better because as the economy started to recover, we were able to get Lake Tahoe Restoration Act reauthorized at the end of 2016, at the end of the Obama administration. And that was the result of a ton of legislative advocacy and bringing awareness of the importance of keeping the EIP going. And as far as program work, like I said, a lot of the low-hanging fruit have been picked. Now we're doing much bigger, more complex, more multi-benefit projects that cross many focus areas. We also launched LT Info, which is now our online EIP data hub, where all of our project information is now hosted online so the public can see it. It's very transparent, and it really is an amazing tool that I'm going to go into later about tracking our expenditures, our performance measures, and our priorities of how we're doing. Next slide. Okay, so with that background, I'm just going to take you to how the program's organized today. It's organized in four major focus areas, the first one being watersheds and water quality. Our goals here, like I've said, are to reduce stormwater pollution to the lake, restore meadows and wetlands, prevent and control invasive species, and improve overall ecosystem health, climate resilience, and improve lake clarity. So in this program area to date, we've accomplished a ton. A few highlights are we have finished the retrofit of all the major highways around the basin. We've established the total maximum daily load, the TMDL, now that really maps out a 65-year roadmap of how we're going to regain the clarity of the 97 feet that we once enjoyed at Lake Tahoe. Just this year, you can see that picture is from the Conservancy. We completed the largest wetland restoration to date of the Upper Truckee River Marsh. We established the Watercraft Inspection Program for AIS back in 2008, have had no new invasions of AIS since then. And with our now AIS control programs has definitely ramped up with 24 acres treated last year, which is the highest we've done to date. Next slide. Forest health, of course, still a top priority. As I said, this focus area really ramped up after the Angora fire, and the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team has completed more than 70,000 acres of treatment since the Angora fire, totaling now over 90,000 since 1997. Our main goal here is to avert catastrophic wildfire in the basin and improve our forest resilience. And we really saw that goal achieved during Caldor fire. As you all know, you were here, there were many things at play during that day when the fire crested into the basin. The heroic actions of our first responders, of course, first, the weather giving some favorable conditions to get control of the fire, but it was really clear that the work we had done to date on hazardous fuels treatment helped avert a catastrophe there and enabled our first responders to get in there to get control of the fire. As you can see in this picture, that picture is from Sugar Pine State Park on the West Shore, and we are increasing the use of prescribed fire in the basin. And the local jurisdictions and states have really ramped up defensible space inspections, achieving the highest record, over 6,000 inspections just last year to date. I'll let Kat McIntyre after me give zero in more on the accomplishments in this focus area. Next slide. Sustainable recreation and transportation. This is one of our bigger focus areas that we're developing more now in this current era. And it really focuses on getting people out of their cars, implementing critical missing links in our trail system, in our transit systems, improving our public access and facilities. And all of these projects have enormous environmental benefits, but they also improve our quality of life here in the basin. And so major accomplishments here, we now have integrated corridor planning in most of our major corridors in the basin, which really integrate transportation, recreation, safety, environmental benefits, all at the corridor scale for planning. And I'll just hop counterclockwise around the lake quickly to just point out some of the other ones. We've also worked on upgrading our older recreation facilities. Round Hill Pines, Sand Harbor are really good examples of that. We've done really amazing congestion improvement projects that have helped revitalize communities. You can see that in the Kings Beach corridor and capital improvement plan, and also in Tahoe City, where we've done work to bypass at the roundabouts outside Tahoe City and make that a more walkable, bikeable area. On the West Shore now, you have the longest contiguous link of the bike and pedestrian trail that we like to call the Tahoe Trail, that we hope that will one day circumvent the lake. We're putting in that link by link. And in the South Shore, the city has implemented many multi-benefit complete street projects where we improve drainage, sidewalks, bike lines, bike lanes, lighting all simultaneously, like on Highway 50 or on Sierra Boulevard recently completed. Next slide. And the final focus area is science, stewardship, and accountability. The EIP has always been grounded in science, and we have such a good representation of good scientists from both states, the federal government, and other sectors working together as part of the Tahoe Science Advisory Council now. We are also engaging our residents and visitors in science, where we do that through programs like the League to Save Lake Tahoe's Eyes on the Lake program, where people can report and monitor invasive species while they're out recreating on the lake. And we've also prioritized getting really consistent information and outreach to our basin residents and visitors. And we do that through leading and investing in publications like Tahoe In Depth, and through the great work of partners that have worked together to develop consistent messaging campaigns like Take Care Tahoe. Next slide. Here's just a quick slide of the 80 plus partners that are implementing the EIP. We thought long and hard about how do you really visualize how many partners that is, and it's hard to do all on one screen, so it's hard to read. But you can see there, you've got the federal agencies, you've got the states, the local jurisdictions. It really gives you a good visual representation of how strong the partnership is, and really, truly one of the biggest collaboratives in the country now doing environmental work together and environmental collaboration. Next slide. Also in place now is our EIT collaborative governance structure. I want to mention again the TAI steering committee, Tahoe Interagency Executive Steering Committee, that was now established more than 15 years ago, but it's still in existence today. We have executive representation from all the sectors of the EIP, federal, Nevada, California, local, science, the Washoe Tribe, private sector, and TRPA and the Forest Service co-chair that committee. And also those four focus areas on the right-hand side, we have active EIP working groups in all of these focus areas that work together with the executives to really give them the priorities, the details, the challenges, the accomplishments that are happening in each of those focus areas. And I facilitate this committee, and we've really found a system that works well for us. This is voluntary. It's done because we can do more together than apart. And it's really worked as over time to set this collaborative governance structure together so that we can really implement and coordinate well across all of the focus areas. Next slide. Also, we've established a pretty good rhythm in the EIP. I just want to touch on how we really work our annual cycle through. We still have the big list of projects, the EIP priority list. Right now, there's about 360 projects on it, and we update it every single year. And every implementer that has an EIP project enters it into LT Info, the online tracking system I was talking about. And those projects are tracked from start to finish, and all of that list lives online. We really try to focus our funding prioritization at the beginning of the year, like the January through March kind of timeframe, where all of those different EIP working groups are working together to prioritize those projects. We work with the TAI Steering Committee to submit our annual appropriations request for LTRA on March 15th. Of course, the summer's truly gangbusters on implementation. We're trying to get that summer season in where we're really putting projects on the ground. And then as we go into the winter season and projects are wrapping up, we go into reporting season where project implementers are going back online. They're entering what they did that year, where it came from, performance measures that were accomplished, before and after photos, all lives online there. And I can show you on the next screen a screenshot of what that ends up looking like. So here you see a screenshot of the EIP tracker. The tool is so helpful because as you can see on the front page, it has a live ticker that updates as people enter their information. So you can see we're sitting at 774 projects completed. As I've said, we've invested over $2.6 billion to date, and that's from a number, many different funding sources from all different funding sectors. And for performance measures, you can see the graph there on the right. It's a good visual of the performance measures. That's defensible space inspections completed. And if you can see this, it maps it by year, by jurisdiction, and by number. So we can, it's aggregating and tallying that all of this together for us so we can see trends. We can, as you can see, the biggest record year was this past year. And great displays that we can use to report out to our funders or other implementers or anyone that wants to see this information. Next slide. It also aggregates and sorts the funding for us. And here you see the funding spent by each sector in the EIP since 1997. We're approaching $2.7 billion. But it's if it's $2.6 billion, it really averages out to about $100 million in expenditures a year. We're in our 26th year, matches out pretty well, which is kind of, it just works out really well with what they estimated right in the beginning. It was going to be $900 million. It ended up being a billion for that first 10 years. And it's really kind of kept that pace through the entire program. And I should say, I want to give credit to Sitka Technology, who really helped us develop this tool, because before this used to take an enormous amount of time to figure out. And it was done through spreadsheets. It was done. It just took a lot longer. So it's really great to have this tool. And for the ease of reporting for all the implementers, it's really just invaluable. Next slide. Recently, TRPA and other partners want to take a look at the economic impact of the program. We did commission an economic study a couple years ago and found that for every million invested in the EIP, we are getting a one on average, a 1.6 million return. And that's not just to the basin itself, that's to surrounding counties around Tahoe as well. It is a job creator, and it has given us over $5 billion in economic output since 1997. Next slide. So bringing it all back full circle, the summit is still a staple in our annual cycle. Nevada, you see this picture here from Nevada hosting the 26th annual summit last year at Sand Harbor. It's here where every year we showcase those accomplishments. We elevate our challenges, we elevate our funding requests, and it also really symbolizes and is the commitment each year for each sector to continue to invest and champion this program for Tahoe. Next slide. So my last three slides are focused on the EIP strategic initiative. And the strategic initiative really focuses on building on the success that we've had for the EIP program and determining how we can increase the pace and scale of the program. We're already doing a lot. That's clear because we are putting in new projects. We're also maintaining all of the projects that we've put in the ground to date. But to keep pace with new threats like climate change, which is hurtling new threats at us, we have to. And so we've come up with a few different areas we want to focus on to try to help increase the pace and scale of the program. And I'll go into each of those right now. Next slide. The first is the Cutting the Green Tape initiative. And this initiative really focused on the environmental review and permitting process for EIP projects. It's a play on words. You know, a lot of times you got to go through a lot of red tape to get a project on the ground. And for these environmentally beneficial projects, we've nicknamed it green tape. And as many of you know, depending on the jurisdiction, often EIP projects must undergo environmental review and multi-level permitting by multiple agencies. And those processes, I want to underscore, are important and are necessary, but they do often take years to complete. And so we're taking a hard look to see if there are ways we can streamline and improve those processes among our different agencies so we can increase the pace on getting these environmentally beneficial projects on the ground. This has been a signature initiative of the California Natural Resources Agency, and I served as a facilitator of some of the statewide roundtables around California to dig into this topic. It's a common challenge for many environmental collaboratives around California and the country that are all trying to grapple with how we can do this, just improve the processes while maintaining the integrity of what we're trying to do. And we recently, you see the project picture up here on the right, that's a picture of the Taylor Tillack Marsh, which is a project we just recently implemented over the last year. This project did require multi-level environmental review and permitting from multiple agencies. And once we got into implementation, we really realized what a great case study it would be to really take a pause, look back at the process that we had just done and see if there were ways we could document the lessons learned and inform future EIP projects and how they can improve processes. And it was kind of a perfect case study because of the many different agencies involved, the level of environmental review it needed to do, urgency of this project. We were dealing with a 17-acre infestation of aquatic invasive species in this marsh, and every implementation season you miss, the environmental issue is degrading. So time is of the essence to be able to get a AIS infestation under control, while also doing the due diligence of making sure you do it in the most environmentally beneficial manner. So it's a great case study. We recently put on contract a independent facilitator from the Consensus Building Institute, Gina Bartlett, to convene all the agencies that worked on this project and really do an after action review and report. We're right in the middle of that now. We're going to be bringing it to the Executive Steering Committee and working through this to figure out which recommendations we want to take forward for future EIP projects. Next slide. The second prong of this initiative is really increasing EIP funding. And this one is kind of a no-brainer on really needing to scale up the funding to increase our pace and scale. The Lake Tahoe Restoration Act was reauthorized in 2016, as you see there in the Obama picture that was him presenting in that 2016 summit. It's expiring next year. and we're already working with a coalition of partners to get it reauthorized. And of course, we'd love to expand the funding that we receive through the Act and the federal appropriations. Since the 2016 reauthorization, we've received approximately $80 million out of the $415 million that's authorized. So we'd love to see the Act reach its full potential. And even though it's been $80 million, it's not $415 million, that funding has been critical to getting some of our biggest projects to date on the ground. The Taylor to Lac project that I just mentioned, the Upper Truckee River Marsh, Meeks Bay planning, the Tahoe Keys environmental planning, and the control methods test all were possible because of this new federal funding through the recently reauthorized Act. Forest fuels reduction, of course, too. There's a lot of other funding sources that I am not going to go into detail from the states, from local, from private, but having this federal anchor really helps to this day serve as that anchor for the match for the other sectors to help with all of these projects getting on the ground. And having this one dedicated constant, it truly helps us strategically plan better for implementation of the program. And as far as expanding other funding sources, I will mention a big one we've started working on with the TICE Steering Committee, and that's the Santini-Burton Act. The Santini-Burton Act directs federal funding to the Forest Service to acquire sensitive lands in the basin. To date, to advance our restoration goals in that focus area. However, over time, the amount of sensitive parcels that are going to be available to acquire is going down and down. It's not as big as it was 20, 30 years ago. So we do want to look at the options. Is it possible to expand that act to be able to direct that funding to some of the other priority actions we have in the EIP today? And lastly, I'll talk about the last part of our strategic initiative. Next slide. That's engaging in national and regional networks. And so, like I've said throughout the presentation, there's power in numbers, there's power in the collaborative partnerships, and we are increasing our reach outside the basin by taking leadership positions in both these networks, the National Landscapes Conservation Network and the California Landscape Stewardship Network. These networks bring practitioners together at the regional and national level to expand landscape scale restoration. And being active in these networks expands our voice, the awareness of our work, allows us to advocate at a bigger scale for policy and for funding. And of course, we learn a ton from each other when you are working with other practitioners and really expanding the collective capacity of our work. So with that, I will conclude, and I would love to hear any feedback or questions. In particular, would love your feedback on the strategic initiative and the actions we're taking to move and increase the pace and scale forward. And if you have feedback and ideas we can incorporate into that, would love to hear them. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Kim. With that, board members, questions and comments? Please, Alexis.
Thank you. And what a great overview. I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, with the EIP program, how do we discuss the transportation wins? Because I know that that's part of this, but then we've segmented transportation outside of it, and we have a 7-7-7 plan, and we've got TTD, who is another agency who's implementing all these projects. And I'm just trying to make sure, like, should it be an ETIP plan? Because it is, transportation is an integral part of all of these works. I mean, obviously there's restoration projects which don't necessarily have to do with transportation projects, but, and then, so that's one thought I was having, thinking about how to look at this cohesively, but I'm sure you've already thought that out and know what you're doing with that. But, and then on the Santini-Burton Act, I'm really excited we're engaging stakeholders. I just want to make sure we're engaging transportation stakeholders as well, because I think going back to the ETIP plan that I want to rename it to, but I think it's just really important that we make sure that we hear from them, and then, you know, making sure if there's any way to get the local governments involved. And I'm sure that as we're working through that process, we'll bring that back to the TRPA board to discuss. But there's a lot of Forest Service properties that need investments. And I think the Santini-Burton could be an opportunity for that too. And it's I'm thinking selfishly about a project in the Tahoe Meadows, which is maybe technically outside of the Tahoe Basin, but certainly affects the Tahoe Basin visitor. And there needs to be, you know, investments in that area. And I know that other jurisdictions probably have thoughts about that too. But those were just my thoughts, my comments, questions, and thank you for a great overall presentation. I feel like I understand the EIP program so much better hearing Good. Your presentation. Thank you for your work.
I'll start to try to address some of your comments, and then these guys can clean up my mess. One of the nice things about the EIP, which you saw, was it's about 100 partners, and it's all kinds of things. It's not just transportation or water quality or land acquisition or whatever. So we haven't given it the name of any particular function. So it covers all of the, if you think, and I know you know this as a former planner, your capital improvements program, which is, this is an environmental version of that, is how you implement things you can't implement through private development. That's what this is, includes everything. In terms of the improvement program for transportation, we also do that as the MPO. We have the FTIP and the two state TIPs that we do. So we do those, but those are the same thing that shows up in the EIP. So it's, we're not, we don't want to take it and name it after one function, but we want to embrace all of that to implement the regional plan and attainment threshold. So I hope that kind of answers your question.
It does. I do understand that. I hope we're not shooting ourselves in the foot saying we've had nearly $3 billion of investment in Tahoe and we need more. And so that's where, with the 777. So that's my only, like, how to look at this with that lens of, you know, all these stakeholders coming to the federal government asking for support and making sure that we can discuss how that's part of a bigger picture and articulating that.
Julie can add to this, I'm sure, but part of our success has been that we have all the different asks together when we go to our funders. You probably remember in Reno Sparks, there was a similar thing, I think called one region or something like that. And so putting all that together and going with one voice really is effective. Yes, it is a big number, $100 million a year. In some regions would go, gee, I wish we had that much, but this is an outstanding natural resource, water. Tahoe is one of a kind on the global stage. So I don't know that we can ever have too much money to take care of this treasure.
Madam Chair, please. Great. Again, a great question, Julie Reagan. Just to build on John's explanation, another way to look at it, transportation has always lived within the umbrella of the EIP. For example, the Fannie Bridge project that Kim mentioned on the North Shore, the Tahoe City Transit Center, Kings Beach Commercial Corridor, those were always high profile EIP transportation projects. But transportation is even bigger than that. And that's where I think what the thread you're pulling is an important one, because it's a world in and of itself. So what we're trying to do is to unify the work of the Bi-State Transportation Consultation, the 777 funding strategy, and link that up so that we can advocate as a whole for Tahoe, as John was saying, under a unified, you know, common agenda for Tahoe, but yet really focus on those multi-benefit projects, because we know most of our transportation projects are also water quality projects. They're filtering runoff from the roads, they're reducing greenhouse gas emissions, there's multiple benefits. So we plan to do that. And then in the analysis of new funding, the Santini-Burton money, what we're trying to position, working with all of our partners and absolutely local governments at the table through the Executive Steering Committee and the Tahoe Transportation District as well, what are the projects that are underfunded? You know, the transportation projects are not authorized under the Restoration Act. So could we get consensus in the basin and of our delegation to prioritize new funds, potentially, if we would be successful in amending Santini-Burton, to prioritize projects like sustainable recreation and transportation, which we know benefit all the other environmental issues. And that's something that we're having just initial conversations about. And so we'll just make sure we definitely stay in close contact with the TTD.
And I see Vince's hand up, if you want to go ahead.
Thanks. I mean, it's amazing how much work has been done up there and the plans that we have and all the progress and how we've gotten everyone on board. I think something that is missing for me is just an idea of the scale of what we've accomplished so far, where we are. You know, I know we have a million different metrics that we track, but possibly too many and not really easy, at least from what I've seen, to get a grasp of where we are and where we want to be and what some different investments will generate for us. And I think it's really critical for going out and getting money and explaining to people why this money is so important and what they've gotten from it. You know, I was thinking with the water quality issues, something like the CO2 graphs that they show, you know, a do nothing scenario of our emissions going up, but that line keeps bending down as we do these different things. And you bent that line down a ton in terms of nutrients entering the lake over time. I'm imagining, I mean, that we've spent a lot of money and all the roads have been retrofitted. I just don't have a good sense of that. And I imagine a lot of other people don't. So it's harder to see what they're getting from their investment. So I would love to see us do more graphical representations of kind of where we are and what these next investments will get us for our sake and our funders' sake. So.
I have a quick response for board member. What a great segue to the last of our initiative presentations next month on the thresholds and performance measures. I think that will tie it up, but seriously, we have a new model for our thresholds that includes, and I'm sure Dan Segan will show you this next month, but it includes what we call a results chain, which is exactly what you're talking about. This is the policy change and this is the result, or this is the investment and this is the result. And we're trying to develop that, as Ashley knows, being on the Threshold Update Initiative Stakeholder Working Group, we're trying to develop new thresholds that really do track all that instead of just one number. So, yes, I think that applies to the EIP, but I think it actually applies much broader, Vince. And so, bring that up again next month if we don't address it well, because I think that's exactly what we're trying to do with the new thresholds and new performance measures. And I'm sure Kim or Julie might have something to say about it relative to the EIP.
Kim Chevalier, for the record. I'll just add, I didn't get to dig in too deep on some of the focus areas, and there's more there, and I think we could get you some. We have action plans and documentation of accomplishments by focus area, like the Forest Action Plan or the TMDL reporting that really shows our progress, the Transportation Action Plan. We have an Aquatic Invasive Species Action Plan. All of those dig in a little bit more, but point well taken. And I think you will see it at next month's governing board of how we can really extrapolate out of those action plans and show it in a really visual nature of where we're at on our goal, on achieving our goals, and how much we have left, how much funding we need, all of that. It's just kind of collating it all together. The EIP is so big.
And if I could make one other comment especially for the newer board members, you all said at your last retreat, we want to know more about how all this stuff works. And I hope you can see through the last 5 months and this one coming up, that'll come up, how all of these things are intertwined. So when, for example, Ken Kasman talks about innovation initiative and digital first, well, that's where the EIP tracker came from and LT Info. And we talk about updating the thresholds and having better performance measures. Part of that is capturing the EIP and the new focus on climate. So it's all really, they're kind of artificial breaks to do each one each month, like transportation and sustainable recreation. But that's, you're still talking about this month. So hopefully we've set the stage by showing you all these things, and we're sorry that we kind of had to break them into segments, but we don't want to keep you here for 3 days straight.
Please go ahead, Shelley.
Could be a good presentation, Kim. Is this information online? Do you post these PowerPoint presentations online?
Yeah, the governing board. This presentation will be posted on our website.
Okay, good. You know, with respect to cutting the green tape, I'm wondering, and I don't mean to sound this, use this as a subterfuge, but, you know, earlier today we were talking about the gasification project at the landfill, at the, well, we'll call it the dump. That's not very glorious, is it? A transfer station. Okay. But I'm wondering if we can recast some of these EIP programs as pilot projects, you know, to facilitate the permitting of these projects, especially if they're on a small scale. I mean, large scale projects, I think, by their very nature, are going to require and demand more scrutiny. But, you know, if you had a lot of these micro projects that were cast as pilot projects to investigate the efficacy of doing certain things to help advance the EIP, I'm wondering if we couldn't somehow lessen the time necessary to get these projects permitted.
I like that a lot. And I think we can integrate that more into the strategic initiative. We've done that for projects in the past for EIP. You know, UV light comes to mind, you know, for aquatic invasive species. We implemented that as a pilot project to really understand more about what the effects are of that particular tool. New technologies that come online like that. There's a few examples that come to mind, but I think that it's a great idea to really formalize it more, like how can we put some pilot projects on the ground to test new areas where we want to look at the environmental review and permitting.
Okay, great, thank you.
Can I see Ashley online?
Thanks. Just a couple of comments. First, I just wanted to applaud you all for the dashboard because in my work with the U.S. Climate Alliance, I use as an example of what other states should be doing to show their accountability for achieving their environmental goals. So nice job on that. And then just wanted to also reflect on a couple of the other comments that we heard. First, on the pilot idea, I think it's a great one, especially because we could draw on successful examples from outside of the basin to get some of those projects moving a little bit more rapidly. So call it a pilot for the EIP, but also draw on those best practices and really look for those opportunities to move a little bit more rapidly. Along those lines, kind of touching on Alexis's funding conversation too, I think there's a way of also demonstrating all of the different funding sources that go into achieving the EIP as a way of showing the benefit not only to the year-round residents, but also to people visiting the basin. So whether that's, you know, signage on an EIP project or something on the dashboard that really emphasizes how this is, you know, this is as we were hearing John say, right, this area of unique natural resource benefits, right? You really can show that. We're bringing together all this funding, we're aggregating it for benefits for not only the year-round residents, but the tourists as well. So there's a couple of ways I think that we can message this to show that, you know, $100 million a year is actually not that much for all of the benefits we're getting. And in fact, getting more to achieve these goals would provide the localized and statewide, region-wide, west-wide benefits. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else? John?
Thanks, Kim, for the presentation. Nice job. On the economic benefits part, has it been broken down into the number of jobs that were created for the project? I think you said that. And then further down into where those employers are based and maybe thinking forward into workforce development opportunities, you know, partnering with the community college, the career and technical education program at the high school, and then same for others throughout the basin and Carson and throughout the region. It just seems like there may be, you know, thinking ahead to show, hey, these are the kind of jobs that have been created from this. Here's where there are gaps right now in the workforce. Here's some opportunities as we think ahead to the strategic initiative, et cetera, right? We got the new forest program at the college. That's an obvious connection. And some folks coming on at the city that are going to be doing work related to this, but any thoughts on that, on maybe how this could be kind of proactively connected to workforce development and education programs in the region so that they can think about tailoring their offerings to EIP programs?
Sure. Thank you. Great question. Kim Chevalier for the record. I'm going to start, and Julie, you may want to add, but I believe the stat that we got out of that report was it creates on average 1,700 jobs a year. That is in the basin and also externally with the surrounding counties. And it didn't go much deeper than that as far as types of jobs and where they're coming from and who and what and how. But the Prosperity Center does a lot of that work through analyzing that data. And these reports are kind of connected. And so I think there just recently was the Economic Summit a couple months ago here in the basin. And so really making sure that the work of the EIP is connected in with what the Prosperity Center is incorporating in their economic reports, I think can really get at the goals that you're talking about.
And I'll just add, I think it's a great opportunity, John, particularly with the projects that you mentioned, front and center, forest health, workforce development. And I think it's a great opportunity for us to partner with local jurisdictions who need to show the value, I think, of some of these projects in terms of an economic revitalization model. So we'd love to work with some staff, you know, at the local governments as well, just to tease that out a little bit further. Because I think our study just scratched the surface. It would be nice to be able to dig deeper, because honestly, that makes our job easier when we go to public funders like the Congress, like our states, to really have a finer grain of detail with the benefits that, you know, the argument that we always make is the environment is the economy and the economy is the environment at Tahoe. And it's, I think that's something we could follow up on.
Alexis, go ahead.
You just knocked something free from me. So thank you for that. And I was just thinking of the Nevada Tahoe Conservation District and how many projects they're doing and probably the jobs that are created with contractors there. So I'm sure there's a lot of opportunity to look at that, but the other thought I had is there, because local government entities meet with our federal delegation on, you know, Washoe County issues, for example, I'll meet with the federal delegation. It'd be so helpful for me to know, and perhaps this is already given to the board and I've missed this, what our federal priorities are for each biennium or each year. And maybe that should go to the local government committee. I don't know, adding one more layer of bureaucracy with what you do. I don't know if that's fair, but I was just thinking like it would be helpful for me to have that document because I can help advocate as well and be a supporter, you know, in talking to, you know, the states. And Julie, we met with the state of Nevada and, you know, continuing those relationships on a local level and making sure that, you know, we're touching on all of those things is just one thought I had.
And I can jump in on that. Thank you, Alexis. We have traditionally vetted the priority list through the Environmental Improvement Program Transportation Outreach Committee, but I love the idea of also making sure the local government entities know, because you all have your own legislative priorities that are going in respective places. So we'll make sure to do that. That's a great idea.
All right, final call. Okay. Let's go to public comment on this item. Again, if any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand by clicking the raise hand button at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 on your phone now.
Madam Chair, we have one hand raised online. Steve Teixeira, if you unmute, you can address the board.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the governing board, Steve Teixeira, on behalf of both my company, Sustainable Community Advocates, and Tahoe Chamber. I've personally and professionally been a part of EIP advocacy since we began back in the 90s with the EIP, and wanted to address Commissioner Hill's, we've struggled with how to incorporate transportation, you know, as effectively as we do forest health, fuels reduction, AIS, et cetera, into the Lake Tahoe Restoration Act. The fact of the matter is, as many of you know, it has to do with the committee structure in Congress. So if we did talk in the beginning about adding transportation in, but then you route into a whole different set of congressional committees in both the House and the Senate, which then gets to be a problem in terms of getting bills through and getting that much work done. So transportation is not specifically in the Restoration Act, but it certainly is top of mind when we go and present our priorities to Congress. And over the last couple of years, in particular with the focus on infrastructure and a greater focus on transportation at the national level, you know, we've done pretty well. We did well in the beginning when the Federal Lands Access Program was established. We got major money for the Highway 28 corridor in Nevada and for the Vandy Bridge project in Tunnel City. So we've struggled with how to integrate transportation, but from a programmatic standpoint, in terms of the EIP, those priorities are definitely integrated. They're just not all coming out of the Lake Tahoe Restoration Act. So I just thought I'd add that historical perspective in case folks were wondering about why we have it set up the way that we do. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other hands raised?
Madam Chair, there are no other hands raised online to comment on this item.
Thank you. With that, we'll close public comment. And since this was informational only, we can move on to our next agenda item. This brings up agenda item 7B, which is the update on progress and priorities from Tahoe Fire and Fuels team, including Calder Fire Recovery. Information on this item can be found on page 225. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand to comment on this item. Kat, you're up again. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, board members. Today, I'm going to give you an update on forest health progress and priority work for the 2020 year. Next slide, please. So the overview of the presentation today, I'm going to highlight key work in a comprehensive framework that forestry professionals have been using, where we kind of view communities and resilient communities and landscapes as connected. So we always hear about the priority landscape work that we're doing, but there is also this huge focus that needs to be paid attention to in terms of what we think about as resilient communities. So things like defensible space inspections, home hardening, FireWise community programs, those types of things. And so I'm going to walk you through community engagement, the work we've done around communications. We'll hit on the priority project accomplishments that we've seen this year. We'll talk about capacity building that is occurring around the basin. We'll talk about funding and prioritization, and then I can open it up for discussion and questions. Next slide, please. So to remind everyone of TRPA's role in forest health. So we are not the traditional agency in terms of land management. We don't have a land base that we're managing, but TRPA still plays a really critical role in terms of getting priority projects and work done around the basin and increasing forest resilience. So we act as a convener and collaborator to increase the pace and scale of treatment and support our partners in getting more work done. We play a leadership role in the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team. We are signatory to the multi-jurisdictional fuel strategy. And as Kim was noting, EIP is really in place to help accelerate threshold attainment. And so TRPA thresholds, we have those in place related to forest health and vegetation preservation. And so again, we are just constantly working towards trying to increase the amount of work that we get done, but also achieve those thresholds in terms of forest health. Next slide, please. Okay, so for those who were in the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee, I stole this slide again. You've seen this one. But just to give everyone a little bit of a refresher on where we've been and what we've been doing, the Angora fire burned in 2007, and this was about 3,100 acres in South Lake Tahoe. It burned 254 structures, including homes. And this really spurred the creation of the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team and brought partners together to get more work done towards increasing pace and scale of treatment, but then also reducing catastrophic wildfire risk in the basin. And we have made great progress and strides since Angora. We've treated almost 90,000 acres. We have record numbers of defensible space inspections and tree removal permits. And we've been streamlining regulations through that time. But as Caldor, you know, Caldor really acted as that reminder to us that climate change is occurring. And with climate change, we are seeing bigger fires that are moving faster and they're burning hotter. So in August 2021, as you all know, 10,000 acres of the 220,000 acre Caldor fire burned within the basin. Again, this is one of only two fires that have ever crested the Sierra. And it just reminds us that the model of work that the TFFT operates under has been instrumental in helping to control fires and save homes. We saw that, and Kim highlighted that in her presentation, but it also reinforces the critical nature of the work to come. Next slide, please. So I'm gonna talk about our community engagement accomplishments over the past year. Next slide, please. In terms of communications, so for many of you who don't know, the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team has a working group called the Fire Pit. It's the public information team. And they were able to, the wildfire awareness campaign began in May 2022. We have that annually. And they were able to get out 25 different banners and graphics distributed amongst all of our partner agencies to share out on their networks. We did 32 press releases that were distributed out through Fire Pit. There was a Spanish event that was done by the RCD and City of South Lake Tahoe. There's a prescribed fire subcommittee that has been developed. Three of the fire protection districts are actually leading that up, and it's going to include a virtual and in-person tour. Fire Fest happened this past fall, and over 1,000 participants from the communities came to meet with different fire districts. TRPA was there, and to learn more about fire prevention in the basin. And then Take Care funding and fire awareness campaign, there were billboards on the main entries, just reminding everyone that they're entering fire country and we need to be careful about fire risk in the basin. Next slide, please. So another big program that has seen great progress is the Fire Adapted Communities program that runs out of the Tahoe RCD. So we have had 54 engaged fire adapted communities, 17 FireWise US a recognized site. So that's a special recognition. And we've seen an increase of 5 in just the last 6 months. So we went from 12 to 17 since April, and that's a huge increase. We have 64 neighborhood leaders, and these are people who live in the community who are really like taking the charge on themselves to get their neighbors together to do this type of work. There were 4 Tahoe Network Fire Adapted Communities workshops where we brought those leaders together. And then there were 44,000 people reached through newsletters and social media. And so that's not just local residents. That's also visitors. That's anyone who's interested in this information is able to get it. And that's great progress. Next slide, please. So now I will highlight the priority projects and accomplishments that we've been able to do in the past year. Next slide. So this is just the basin-wide overview. So as I mentioned, about 90,000 acres of forests have been treated to reduce hazardous fuels. And this is, that middle graphic is directly from the EIP tracker on Lake Tahoe Info. On the left-hand side, you see our graph of acres of forest fuels reduction treated. It only goes to 2021. We just opened our reporting season for 2022. But we are continuing to make great progress in terms of getting acres treated. And then the map on the right, I thought this was really interesting. This just came out in an email from the Forest Service this week. These are all the projects that are going on currently around the basin. And I think it's just fascinating because it's work occurring at all levels. It's local, state, and federal. In every quadrant on both sides of the lake, we're really, you know, getting on the ground and getting that work done. Next slide, please. So I'm going to highlight a few of the really big projects that we've been seeing occurring thus far. And our first one is the South Shore Fuels Reduction Project. So this project is much of the work that you see on Pioneer and those neighboring communities. The main goals are forest health and hazardous fuel reduction. So we're getting in there, thinning trees to meet those two goals. It's estimated that it'll cost about $23 million to complete this project. Currently, the majority of funding is coming out of SNPLMA, the Southern Nevada Planning Public Land Management Act. Gosh, I'm getting confused with FLPMA, and the Forest Service. And it's focusing on the urban wildland, it's the urban parcels in the wildland urban interface. And so this includes hand thinning, prescribed burning and piles, and mechanical thinning, and a thus far, they have been able to accomplish just under 12,000 acres of treatment. And so this project is big and it is moving forward, and they're making great strides into getting that work done. Next slide, please. So Spooner Lake has two priority projects that are occurring right now. So the Spooner Front Country Hazardous Fuels Reduction Project, this is led by Nevada Tahoe Resource Team and the Nevada Division of Forestry. And this is 42 acres that will create a 100-foot defensible space zone around key infrastructure up there. And then the Spooner Landscape Resilience Project, again, led by NTRT and Nevada Division of Forestry. And this is 300 acres of thinning in the Lake Tahoe Nevada State Park. You might have seen that they've been felling trees. These are large trees, and then they're removing them by helicopter in that area. And the logs are actually being sent to Sierra Pacific Industries Mill up in Quincy, California. And the chips and any kind of tops and limbs are being sent to the Loyalton Biomass Facility. So again, connecting those pieces of where things are going and what opportunities exist regionally. I want to point out that both of these projects are currently being funded by Tahoe Bond Act and license plate fees from the state of Nevada. Next slide, please. So this is a project that I was particularly excited about. Sugar Pine Point State Park has been doing a great amount of broadcast burning and understory burning in the fall of 2022. So they were able to accomplish approximately 8 acres. It's a small amount, but it's a great start, especially for the basin where we don't see a ton of broadcast burning. And this was an area of remnant old growth in the state park. And so you can see on the left side is them actively burning. And then on the right side are the fire effects. And I talked to Rich Adams from Cal State Parks, and he said he was super excited that they got the exact type of ecological benefits and fire effects that they were hoping to get. And so it's just a slam dunk to highlight going forward. Next slide, please. So another priority project that you might have heard about or I have spoken about before is the Liberty Resilience Corridors. So this proposed project is approximately 7,600 acres of lands managed by LTBMU and the Tahoe National Forest. And the project comprises roughly 55 miles of Liberty power lines, with 54 of those on LTBMU lands and 1 mile on the Tahoe National Forest. Currently, the total needed to complete this project is $16.9 million. And it is they have funding from, again, SNPLMA, and the Forest Service is funding this work. On the right, you see the kind of the diagram of what a resilience corridor looks like. It's broken into three zones directly underneath the power lines, adjacent to the power lines, and then farther out. And so you can kind of imagine that thinning gets less aggressive as you go farther out. You want a completely clear area underneath your line, and then you get farther out, you just want to be able to thin, and we're really looking for more of that ecological thinning on the outside. Next slide, please. So another priority project, and this is the complement to the Liberty Resilience Corridor, is the NV Energy Resilience Corridors. So treatments within 2,000 feet of the corridor around all lines, 27 acres have been completed on federal land and 230 acres on non-federal land, but they're just getting started. Technical hazard trees removed just during this time period have been about 2,200 trees, and the work is being accomplished through partnerships with LTBMU, local fire districts, and many other basin industry or agencies. So this is actually a really unique project because multiple partners are working on this on both federal land and on the state and private land. So Tahoe Douglas Fire Protection District, North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District, NV Energy, Ascent Environmental, LTBMU are all working together to get this work done. And currently this is being funded through a variety of sources, including NV Energy private funding, Forest Service funding, and I believe SNPLMA. Next slide, please. So another priority project that we haven't heard a lot about, but I think is on everyone's mind, is Lake Tahoe West. So Lake Tahoe West is continuing to move forward. And as I always like to remind people is while Lake Tahoe West has kind of taken on a different vision, there's still work occurring on the West Shore. So we have the West Shore WWE project. California has the PTEIR, the Programmatic Timberland Environmental Impact Report, that allows them to get work done. So there's still work occurring. It's just operating, and it's occurring in a different vision than what we thought Lake Tahoe West was going to be. But Lake Tahoe West is still very relevant and important, and has actually been absorbed into a larger strategic initiative, which is the Tahoe Central Sierra Initiative. So the Tahoe Central Sierra Initiative, or TCSI, has two main goals, and that's to restore and maintain social and ecological resilience across 2.4 million acres, and ultimately build the capacity to do that type of work. And it includes projects such as Lake Tahoe West, the Cables Ecological Restoration Project, the French Meadows Project, and North Yuba Forest Resilience Project. Next slide, please. Many of you are probably interested in what is occurring in terms of Caldor fire recovery. So the Caldor Hazardous Tree and Fuels Reduction CE was finalized in July of 2022, and 400 acres of mechanical treatment have been prepped for implementation to start in the spring and summer of 2023. Another 800 acres of hand thinning will be prepped next spring, summer, and will be ready for implementation in 2024. And it is likely to be the first time next year that they will use the steep slopes code amendment that we passed earlier. And so it'll be a great opportunity for TRPA and the Forest Service to partner together to understand how that's working out, gather information, what BMPs they're using, and really use it to showcase that type of work. Next slide, please. Okay, sorry, we've got a lot of projects. I also wanted to highlight the Tahoe Water for Fire Suppression Partnership. So this partnership was formed in 2007 to address firefighting water infrastructure deficiencies. Approximately 77% of the Tahoe Basin is designated as national forest, and communities served by this partnership are designated as WUI, and any fire event would ultimately impact those federal lands. So water infrastructure really does play a critical role in fire suppression. I think that was in the January of 2022, the TAI Steering Committee formally adopted the Tahoe Water for Fire Suppression projects into the EIP, and they were allocated $2.1 million under the Lake Tahoe Restoration Act funding. And this is another great example of where we are leveraging private funding with federal funding, because many of these projects are extremely expensive. So they take LTRA dollars, but then they also match those dollars in-house with their own funding. Next slide, please. So another main area that we have been really seeing a lot of accomplishments is capacity building. Next slide, please. So as was mentioned, I think John brought this up, in terms of workforce and capacity development, the Lake Tahoe Community College launched their new forestry program this last fall, and getting it up and running was really a collaborative community approach. So the Conservancy and CAL FIRE provided funding for program development. The Tahoe Fund has provided scholarships to all new students, and TRPA and TRCD provided curriculum development and support. I am actually going to be one of the teachers coming this winter, so I will be teaching policy. And the program is going to offer stackable certificates, a proposed associate's degree in science, and training for forest restoration jobs, and just really hopefully providing that pipeline of critical forestry workers that we need in the basin to get our work done. Next slide, please. So there are additionally biomass opportunities, not only regionally, but locally. So many of you may have heard of Cabin Creek in Placer County. In August, the Placer County Board of Supervisors voted to create the North Tahoe Truckee Biomass Task Force. Planning is complete on Cabin Creek, and now they are just developing a plan to finance and get the project in the ground. The Alpine Biomass Collaborative was looking at biomass opportunities in Alpine County. Unfortunately, Measure D just passed over there, which means they are prohibited from looking at biomass opportunities or permitting any biomass over there until that gets repealed and or another ballot initiative comes through. North Star Community Services District is looking at implementing or building a small biomass unit that will help heat buildings in the winter and also heat all of the surfaces in the village to melt snow. And then lastly, the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee heard today a proposed project at South Tahoe Refuse to use on-site green waste that's coming in for electricity and heat generation. Next slide, please. And if there wasn't enough going on, we also have a wood products and utilization industry moving in down in Carson City. So this is not obviously in the basin, but it will play a big role to hopefully getting more work done. So the Carson City Sawmill is a partnership between the Washoe Tribe of Nevada and California and the Tahoe Forest Products Group. It's anticipated to produce 50 million feet of lumber per year. So I did some calculations, and if they're talking about board feet, this would be about 7.5 million 2x4x10s. So that's a lot of timber. Right now, the purchases are coming from Caldor Fire Salvage and Cleanup, and the focus is on post-fire large logs with the potential to retool the system for small log options in the future. And that's really critical for a restoration economy. When we talk about the Tahoe Basin and getting a lot of the ladder fuel out, that small log piece is really critical. So it's good to see that they are looking towards the future and being able to take that type of product. Next slide, please. So lastly, I will wrap up with funding and prioritization. Next slide, please. So I mentioned funding throughout, but we also, I just want to note, we've received record levels of funding for forest health and fuels reduction in the Tahoe Basin. So the Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act awarded us $46 million in their round 18. LTRA, we've pretty much been averaging around $6 million annually for the past 5 years. And the state of California received $35 million the state of California awarded the Tahoe Conservancy $35 million for forest health and fuels reduction projects. And so we have a large influx of money that's available to go to these projects. But we're always trying to think strategically about what projects are available, what funding's on the table, who's getting what, and how we can move pots around in order to make sure that all of our priority work is getting done. One way that we are doing that is the TRPA has just signed an agreement with the Forest Service to act as an intermediary for LTRA funding. And so the Forest Service will be passing passing LTRA dollars to the TRPA, which will then be awarded to non-federal implementers. And this is just a way for us to increase the Forest Service's capacity to get funding out the door. Next slide, please. So in terms of next steps and priorities for the Tahoe Basin, we are currently going to be updating our LTRA priority project list for forest health. And that's going to include a project prioritization process, which has not happened historically. And then we are also going to be developing a new incident action plan. But this one will include 2 years of future projects. So we have that outlook of what's coming down the pipeline. We have community wildfire protection plans being updated currently. Those are critical because each jurisdiction needs to have a CWPP in place in order to be eligible for federal funding. We are continuing to identify capacity and workforce development opportunities. And then lastly, we want to look at how we can engage the Washoe Tribe of California, Nevada, in cultural burning and forest health projects and management more in the basin. Next slide. So with that, I will open it up for discussion and questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Members, please.
Thank you.
Nice presentation, Kat. I just had a question. Did I understand you to say that the timber that was removed as part of the defensible space project Spooner Lake went to Quinson, California? From Spooner, was it Loyalton?
That was the Spooner Landscape Resilience Project. And so logs were sent to Quincy.
Why weren't they sent down to the Carson Valley to the new sawmill site?
I do not know.
Okay.
It predates that site.
Well, I know the site I don't think is operational right now, but they're taking logs from the Caldor Fire,
yeah,
you know, for future processing. And I just think since those logs are a Nevada resource, they probably should go down and benefit a Nevada company. Anyway, I know that that's beyond our purview, but and Jim's not here to answer that question.
Ashley?
Thanks. Yeah, I kind of had a similar question. First of all, I just was wondering about the helicoptering of logs to SPI and Loyalton. And you had talked about bond funding for those projects.
Are the companies that are receiving the logs either feeding back into the projects financially based on the processing and sale of those logs, or are they paying for the helicopters? Like, how are they contributing in a public-private partnership to these types of treatments?
Yeah, I don't know those particular answers, and I can find that information out. I would imagine that they weren't being helicoptered all the way to Loyalton or Quincy. They were probably helicoptered to a landing site and then put on a truck and sent out there. But I can find that information.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I just want to make sure that we're thinking about all of that. And then along the lines of what we just heard from Shelley, will some of these logs, you know, with future treatment projects, will we be trying to keep them closer into the basin with that Carson City sawmill? That's just, and I know you'll find that out.
Yeah, and I can just add, I think the Carson City sawmill, the benefit of that is when you do the calculus of where you're going to take your logs, the haul costs are significantly cheaper to take them down there than it would be to Loyalton. So I imagine that once that facility is up and running and they have more agreements in place, that more product from the basin will just go there because it will just be easier and more cost efficient.
And I'll just add to that, Madam Chair, Julie Reagan. Great questions, Shelley and Ashley. The Spooner project started, I want to say, about 3 years ago. So it did start before the site behind the Walmart in Carson City was available. And that is my understanding. I believe working through our partners at the state of Nevada, the helicopter work was then facilitated, you know, trucking after the fact. And one thing that we can definitely talk about, particularly as the Cabin Creek site evolves, you know, we have new opportunities having two very close proximity areas to the basin, which we haven't had for quite some time. So that site in just outside of Palisades, Tahoe, on the way to Truckee, that site actually came about because of the Kings Beach, you know, the outcry of not siting that facility in the basin facilitated that to happen. And there were federal appropriations that helped the county make that. And now that that's being looked at again, I think it's another opportunity. But we can run down some of those specifics with some of our implementing partners.
Anyone else? John?
The Cabin Creek holdup last time was not coming to terms with Liberty. I suppose that's still a work in progress.
My understanding is the Cabin Creek holdup last time was it was under agreement and Liberty pulled out as the purchaser of the electricity. And so that, I believe, is still in conversation on how that's going to work out.
Is Loyalton operational right now?
Yes.
Bud?
Well, Kat, I just want to thank you for your presentation today. It's very thorough. And, you know, there's always a lot of work to be done on forest health. And I have been concerned about the Tahoe West project because it's seemed to have hit high ground in the last year or so. And I'm glad to hear that it's moving along, perhaps in smaller pieces, but something's being done. I mean, you know, I think the one message we got from Caldor and Dixie was that, you know, we are no longer safe from fires coming over the top. And God only knows what happens if it comes over into West Tahoe. So, you know, we need to put all of our efforts into encouraging all of our partners doing what they have to do to move that. Thank you.
I will add that the Forest Service is going to be conducting, they'll be doing planning, potentially, probably this winter, for Lake Tahoe West. So planning is still going forward on Lake Tahoe West. It's the way that it was envisioned has shifted, but the pieces all still align to do a comprehensive restoration project over there. It's just a different way to do it now.
All right. I was just going to challenge Kat to quickly run through the list alphabetically, just real quick with those projects. I'm teasing. It was impressive and amazing. Backwards. I think we have, let's now turn over to public comment. Public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board, please raise your hand in the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9. And it looks like we do have one hand up already, but I'll turn this over.
Vic Lyon, go ahead and address the board.
Thank you. And good afternoon, everyone. My name is Victor Lyon. I'm the Vegetation Management Staff Officer at the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit for the Forest Service, here locally. And I just wanted to provide some current information for the Lake Tahoe West project, as that was recently addressed in our meeting this afternoon. I anticipate that the Forest Service is going to reinitiate Lake Tahoe West planning. That large landscape planning project is, you know, inclusive of many lands from approximately Emerald Bay clear up to just about Dollar Point on the North Shore. And as Kat mentioned, simultaneously while we're reinitiating the planning effort and having conversation with a forest supervisor at the end of this month on exactly what that new scope of work will look like, we are still implementing the portions of the Lake Tahoe West landscape that were planned prior to Lake Tahoe West, including projects like West Shore WUI. So some of the units that are envisioned as part of Lake Tahoe West are counting on some of those West Shore WUI and other projects getting done. So I just wanted to share that and also offer up if anybody had any questions for me, I may be able to answer those directly or provide information subsequently. One last thing I would add is that the Liberty Utilities Resilience Corridors project is also in that Lake Tahoe West footprint. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Any other hands raised at this time?
Excuse me, Madam Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you. With that, we will close public comment. And since this was an informational only item, we are now onto our next agenda item, which is reports. John Hester, if you could please give the Executive Director status report, including the Tahoe and Brief Monthly Governing Board Report on page 227 of the packet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only thing that I want to say that there are a couple typos we put into the application tracking part of the Tahoe and Brief report, just to see if Shelley caught them. On page 233, the 40 and 40 should be up one line. And on page 234, the number below 70 on the top right corner should be 66, not 34. But other than that, I have nothing to report.
Thank you. Let's move on then to John Marshall for the General Counsel status report.
Sure. This is just a quick update on some pieces of litigation. If you remember the Dobbins appeal that came to the board, I think we talked about this. I can't remember how much we talked about this last meeting. That was filed in state court challenging TRPA's denial of that buoy as being non-littoral. And then they also had claims against the Glenbrook Homeowners Association. That case, as I said, was filed in state court, and we have since removed it to federal court. And our responsive pleading is due in a couple of weeks. And I can't remember this. Did we talk about Garmong and the fact that it was dismissed by the Ninth Circuit? So. We emailed about it. I can't remember which one it was, but the Ninth Circuit affirmed the district court's dismissal of the Garmong case. So absent any requests for en banc reconsideration by Garmong or petitions for certiorari to the Supreme Court, that case may be complete, except for the attorney's fees issue. Dr. Garmong was assessed a significant attorney's fees incurred by the Verizon and the various private parties. He then appealed that, and that's now undergoing a briefing in the Ninth Circuit. In an enforcement case, TRPA versus Parker, this was for an illegal mooring off of South Lake Tahoe Beach. We have taken Mr. Parker's default, and we now have to go through a process for the court to assign civil penalty amount and then we'll seek to recover that amount from Mr. Parker. Hopefully we'll be able to, we thought we had a settlement with Mr. Parker, a not unreasonable one from our perspective for him, but he has been reluctant to sign it. So hopefully during this process, he'll realize it's a better deal than what he's going to get out of court, and we can hopefully bring a settlement to you at some point in the future. And then finally, the Harash case, the Ninth Circuit yesterday evening just denied Mr. Harash's application for a stay pending appeal of the district court's denial of his motion for preliminary injunction to stop the construction of the pier that is just to the north of his parcel. So that we'll have, now we'll start briefing the merits of the appeal on the preliminary injunction over the next 2 months or so. And, you know, we are interested in that case because of the claims against, you know, how that came to the governing board. We talked last time about the process for hearing appeals of grants of permits at the governing board. So that's a quick update of our litigation, some of the key cases in our litigation.
Thank you.
Can answer any questions.
Any questions? All right, seeing none, let's move on to agenda item 9, which is governing board member reports. Are there any members that have reports? Alexis.
Yes, I just wanted to invite anyone who's listening and anyone in the room who would like to come to the Washoe Tahoe Transportation Summit at the Parasol Building tonight at 4 o'clock, and the presentation start at 5:30. We'll be looking at Highway 28, all of the roads in Washoe, and connecting to Crystal Bay, looking at transportation solutions, public safety solutions, multimodal questions and connections, as well as parking ideas. So we've been doing a study for almost a year now, and we're going to show the community what we've got, and we want to hear their input. So looking forward to tonight. Thank you.
That's great. Thanks, Alexis. Bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Even though I'm a California voter, I just want to thank Barbara Sagaski for surviving another campaign, doing such a great job, and also being a excellent member of TRPA. But, you know, all that I heard the last few weeks about what all the election officials went through almost nationwide and dealing with the unfortunate situation of those that deny the validity of our elections. Certainly the work of the Secretary of State's throughout this nation is amazing. And I know Barbara took a lot of grief unnecessarily. And I'm just grateful for people like Barbara that did her job. And thank you.
Thank you so much, Bill. Oh, thank you, everybody, for clapping. I appreciate it. You guys are wonderful. And Bill, you beat me to it, but I wanted to thank Alexis and Charlie for the Nevada Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. You guys did a proclamation, and I just wanted to thank you. I didn't do it during the last meeting that we had, but wanted to make sure that I shouted out to you and told you thank you so much. But it has been such a pleasure to work with the TRPA and get to know all of you individually. And I just think the world of everybody. So thank you all very, very, very much. And Bill, thanks for those kind words.
Thank you so much, Madam Secretary. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Any other member?
Madam Chair, could I?
Please.
We're anticipating a way to honor the departing board members after next month's meeting. And I don't want to spoil it for Barbara, but we know how much you like buoys, and I'll just leave it.
I am really afraid of the next meeting. I really am.
That's great. Thank you.
And Bill, I'm going to miss your not emails. Bill got hacked several times, and I was a recipient of several of his emails. So I'm going to miss those.
Maybe we could put those emails on the buoy and sort of all in there.
Actually, anybody who becomes chair of TRPA is going to get fished. And I get them from Cindy now, and I had them before from Jim Lawrence and from Mark Bruce. I don't know what it is, but whatever happens with TRPA system, when you become chair and you start going through with emails, you colleagues will get an interesting thing requesting money for some really good cause from your chair. And most people just ignore it, as Barbara has, and just files it away.
But we let you know. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, everybody. Well, I'll be up in person next month for my last one.
Good deal.
Yep.
Excellent. Let's move on to agenda item 10, which is committee reports. Any committee have anything to report? Bud?
Yes, on behalf of the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee, we had a meeting this morning, and it was a very productive meeting, very positive. We had a great presentation about the proposed biomass gasification project in the city of South Lake Tahoe. And I do appreciate John Frederick's work of getting this along and moving it along. I've had a talk with John Marshall about just the process of how to get this thing set up to move forward. I think that all of our committee members were impressed by the presentation, and you'll be hearing more about this in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Bud. I echo that. It was a great meeting, and thanks, John, for bringing it to our attention, and Bud for seeing it through. Anybody else? Committee reports? Okay, let's move on to our final public comment. We're now on the general public interest comment period. Any member of the public wishing to address the governing board on any item listed or not listed on the agenda, including items on the consent calendar, may do so at this time. Individuals or groups who have already commented on items listed on the agenda are not permitted to comment on that same topic. The governing board is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public during this public comment period. We'll hear comments on any single topic not on the agenda for up to but not to exceed 30 minutes. We will hear as many unique comments as possible, and we will hear comments for up to but no more than a total of 60 minutes. All unheard comments can be submitted via email and will be forwarded to all governing board members. If any member of the public wishes to speak at this time, please raise your hand now on Zoom or dial *9.
Madam Chair, there are no hands raised online to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you very much. With that, we will close the public comment period. And our last item, is there a motion to adjourn?
I so move.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.